Hello and welcome to the Long Road Podcast. The journey goes ever on with the Long Road, brought to you by Artisan Creative. This episode, what leads to a Scrabble score of either zero or millions? You'll just have to keep on listening to find out. Embark on an enticing journey with the Long Road as we savour the flavours of a Mediterranean classic, Sauce Viali. Follow Steve as he delves deeper along the Vagabond Way. Witness Kev's exciting new journey and listen in as the Bishop triumphantly shares his tale of conquering the perfect pizza dough. The Long Road Podcast, where authenticity meets adventure. Join Steve Bonham, Kev Moore and me, Chris, the Bishop Lydon, from the renegade Americana band The Long Road, as we defy typecasts with our very own brand of quirkiness and rebellion, shaking off the stereotypes of sex, drugs and suffering. Get ready for ridiculous tales, offbeat musings, downright daft moments. Tune in for laughs, tunes, and a rebellious spirit. Hop on the wild ride with the Long Road Podcast from Artisan Creative. Greetings, I am Chris the Bishop Lydon. Come here, closer. Come here. Come on, listen. I want to tell you something. Are you with me? You're great. You're amazing. You're a star. Thanks so much for listening to our little podcast. It's silly and ridiculous, but we have great fun making it, and we really hope you lot out there enjoy it too, wherever in the world you are. Don't forget, if you want to dig into our podcast back catalogue, we have over 70 episodes now, some from way back when the world was a totally different place, and then lots during the bad times of a couple of years ago. Have a root around and see what you fancy. Right, quick sales push that you all have to tolerate each week. Hard Country, our Americana Unleashed album featuring Ain't Gonna Fake It and remastered classic tracks, is available now. Stream it, download it, or pre-order your very own 12-inch vinyl special edition, which is coming out later this summer. Check out thelongroadband.net for all the details on Hard Country. You get the streaming links, you can get the link to our shop to pre-order the vinyl. If you want to buy some other merch from us, by all means, please do. Head to artisan-creative.com/shop and you can support all things Artisan Creative at our Patreon if you go to patreon.com/artisancreative.
And before we get on with our three-way chat for today, here's our track of the week from our new album, Hard Country. This week's track has a great history, perhaps. 40 years ago, Kev and I wrote a very undistinguished song called Mr. Average Sunday Man. 40 years later, we wrote this, Won't Lay My Guitar Down, a much better song. So, 40 years between the first and the second. That must make us one of the longest standing musical songwriting partnerships in rock history, and possibly one of the least productive. Still, it's a great track and expresses exactly how we all feel.
Stood my ground in Berlin. I got stoned in a Spanish bar. Left alone or with Mary Lou in the backseat of my car. Called a son and a young man by a loser half my age. Been robbed by a cheating angel, yeah, as I stumbled off the stage. Heard the dawn a-crying, it's a lonesome kind of sound. One thing you can never say of me is I laid my guitar down, down, down. Chased out of Memphis, 'cause the singer played the fool. Took my vows way past midnight, New Orleans to Liverpool. Hitched a ride on the railroad, let it carry me away. Seemed to spend a lifetime running, guess we all check out today. Heard the dawn a crying, it's a lonesome kind of sound. One thing you can never say of me is I laid my guitar down, 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 laid down. Won't lay my guitar down, it's the last thing I'll ever do. Won't lay my guitar down, I'm bringing it on home to you. Won't lay my guitar down, there's something in my soul.
Three of us are back together for another episode of Chat and Nonsense and Stuff and Things. Hello to Steve in Derbyshire.
Salut!
Kev, we've got Kev at home in Spain. Hello, Kev.
Gayasu.
Any thoughts, Steve, where that's from? Gayasu. Go on, where's it from?
It's Greek. It's all Greek to me.
I've never heard that at all.
Yeah, it just means hello, really. That's it.
Right, there we go. I was looking up a greeting I could provide for you guys, but if you just do a quick Google search on greetings, most of them are some sort of variation on God dag, you know, yeah. Sweden or Norwegian or whatever. They're all just God dag,
yeah.
Danish, God dag. I mean, so, good day, guten tag, God dag. Reading some of these, I'm never sure because I've been sort of tortured by learning French at school.
Yeah.
Never sure which letters you actually say and which you don't say.
Indeed.
It depends.
Indeed.
You know.
I'm not being a scholar here.
Another sweeping generalisation coming our way. Watch out, everybody.
I mean, I'm brave stuff. I think the Welsh gave all their vowels to the French. So
that I could get behind
the
that.
The Welsh language has no vowels at all. And then French is only vowels, really.
Scrabble in Welsh must be a wild ride.
You either score zero or millions. Nothing in between. I was listening to a podcast yesterday about there's a dialect somewhere in Russia where, it's just so impossible to learn. And it's got something like 74 characters in the Latin alphabet of it.
Yeah.
But then there's also the Cyrillic alphabet, which also has 74. So if you're just trying to learn the alphabet in this dialect, I wish I could remember what it was called now. Mm-hmm. But you had to learn 74 times 2, 148 characters to begin with.
Just before you start learning words, yeah.
Yeah, just like blimey.
Well, no, I've got one more piece of information.
Right, okay.
I have actually got one more piece of information. And I might get his name wrong, but the Cherokee people, very, very smart people, and they realised that quite early on with the settlements in their country of people from Europe, that written language was a big deal and very useful. Mm. And this guy, I think his name was Sequoia, so I can't pronounce it.
Well, that rings a
bell,
actually.
But he sat down
yes.
and he worked out, until then they had no written language, and he'd been a jeweller or something, but he worked out a written language in Cherokee,
right.
which I think had something like 80 characters in it. Which sounds a lot, but it covered every single sound. Yeah, I think it's one of the most astonishing kind of bits of creativity in history. I think it's extraordinary.
There you go, listeners. You know, the amount of information you get just from us all saying hello to each other. It's phenomenal.
Having said hello, we'll now get to the main topic, the main agenda point for today's digital meeting. So this week we've got another recipe to look at. Now, this one has been suggested by Kev here. Now, if I recall correctly, when this came up, when we started talking about this a few weeks ago, it came up under the guise of, was the title of the recipe Pasta Viali?
It was sauce viali, because it's
sauce viali. Okay, right.
It's kind of that.
Explain that a bit for the listeners at home. What's going on
so
there?
So Viali, the ex-Chelsea player and manager, I believe, his grandmother used to make this particular type of sauce. It can be used on pasta, but it's very, very, very good for spreading on toasted sourdough and then sticking some Serrano ham on there, and it's just a beautiful breakfast treat.
So talk us a little bit about it. This is your sort of this was your suggestion, Kev. Yeah. What's the idea behind this?
The idea behind
sauce viali.
It was inspired really by, there's a little cafe in the square in my village, and they serve this stuff, or a version of it. This is more of a kind of turbocharged version of it, because it's got, you know, it's got your garlic and your onion and your fresh tomatoes in. I think they just literally pulp the tomatoes and the onion and make it into a spread. But this is a way to really get it much more flavoursome. And I can't really take the credit for it. This is Jackie's skill in sort of deconstructing it and then coming up with a better way of doing it. It can also be done in a slow cooker, which I prefer doing it that way. So whack everything in there and whack it up to till it boils, and then simmer it for 8 hours, and you get a really nice consistency.
Yes, I can imagine that.
Yeah, but it's quite easy to reduce it in the pan and what have you. I mean, I gave a recipe for like six tomatoes there, but you know, I normally probably put about a dozen in, and of course where I live the tomatoes are wonderful and cheap, so you know, but it's absolutely exquisite on toasted sourdough, this stuff.
So the recipe you sent us was basically sort of six tomatoes, half an onion, bit of garlic,
two cloves of garlic,
bit of basil,
basil.
Paprika.
Paprika.
And actually a little bit of chili powder, if you fancied it, was an optional, wasn't it?
It was an option, because it's nice to have a bit of a kick to it,
Bit of a kick, So I went all in on all of that, full on tomatoes, onions, I'm one of those pricks that always puts in more garlic than the recipe says.
Yeah.
If it says two cloves of garlic, I'm afraid I'm always going to put in three.
Yeah, you can never have enough. Totally agree.
Well, you look at a garlic clove, and I wonder, the garlic cloves I see on, like, cooking shows on TV, they look like proper fat garlic cloves.
Yes.
I think that's one of Nigella's things, isn't it? She always refers to garlic in terms of fat garlic cloves.
Yes.
And I often look at the garlic cloves that I get, and I think, this doesn't look fat at all. This looks weedy.
Yeah, I know, I absolutely agree.
And I can't just put one in. Like, if it asks for a garlic clove, I look at it and I go, well, that doesn't feel like one garlic clove. I mean, that feels like half a clove. So I tend to put in, you know, two or three.
Well, my garlic press takes one fat garlic clove. So if it's not full, there's simply not enough garlic.
I have to go back a second, because you said a second ago, Kev, there's no such thing as too much garlic. No, I'm afraid me and my housemate back at university, we did prove that wrong, because when we were 21, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed youngsters in the world, we thought that as well. We thought there's no such thing as too much garlic.
Yeah.
And me and my old housemate, we used to have these weird occasions where we'd go sort of shopping at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
For food, and end up making a roast at 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. We had a wild time at university.
Yeah.
But there was one occasion where we, both of us, had this absolute craving for really garlic bread, really garlicky bread.
Yeah.
And we were both absolutely convinced that we couldn't put too much garlic in. And I don't know how much garlic we put in. We put in, not just clove, bulb after bulb of garlic into this, in with the butter.
Yeah.
Spread it on the bread and put it in the oven. And it was absolutely Disgusting.
I bet you didn't catch a cold, though, Chris, after that.
Oh, no, we were impervious to, like, radiation. We were absolutely... We floated around the house for a fortnight.
Yeah.
But it tasted disgusting.
Oh, that's not good.
That was my scientific foray into proving there actually sometimes is a little bit too much garlic. But I'm a big fan of hefty garlic, plenty of garlic, no problem with
that. So how did you find it, Chris? Did you enjoy the finished article?
Oh, yeah, I mean, the sort of Mediterranean vibe of it, the whole, you know, tomatoes with garlic on bread is just like such a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stunning. I love it. You know, I
can
eat that.
And you put it in a kilner jar and it's there for a few days. You know, it lasts a while in the fridge. It's great.
Kev, I think my life has been enriched.
Good. Good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about it is taking a long time to cook those tomatoes. Mm. That is the core of this, you know. We are such a rush here, you know, whereas if you talk to any Italian... Mama, that's it. Go slow, go slow, and let it all work through. No, I thoroughly enjoyed making it. I put in.
Ooh. Here comes the variations.
The variation. Well, I put in smoked paprika. I think they call it picante, don't they?
Caveat.
So hot smoked paprika. Yeah. So I didn't put the chili in. I just put this version, which I've got a tin of from somewhere. It was lovely, and I did it. I did a taste test. I did it on sourdough bread, and I also did it on a piece of rye bread.
Oh, right.
And they are both really good. Yeah, the rye, because rye bread's got such a strong flavour. It was joyful. I had a silly grin on my face as I had my lunch.
I was a little, you know, with the recipe, I was a little concerned with the amount of paprika it said, because for six tomatoes, it said sort of 3 or 4 teaspoons of paprika. And when I was putting 2 in, I was thinking, well, I'm not... I mean, I'll do what it says, but so I'm, you know me, I'm a bit of a stickler for rules and things. If it says, if a recipe says something, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But it said 3 or 4 things.
I feel a creative opportunity coming up with this recipe.
With the beignets.
This, you should be good yourself in a small loincloth.
If there's a if the recipe hasn't been generated by ChatGPT, I'll do
rub
it.
Yourself all over with a cucumber before attempting to make this recipe.
Yeah, I'll do it. So four teaspoons of paprika. I was like, oh, for this amount of tomatoes, is that going to be overpowering? And so I went through it. Obviously, it wasn't. I was actually wondering at the end, oh, could it take a little bit more of a...
Yes, indeed.
I was expecting it to be quite...
Paprikary. Yeah.
But it was actually fairly mild on the paprika front. Mm. And delicious. There was that concern at the start, but it sort of didn't pan out. Steve, was the sourdough your own making, or was it a bought sourdough?
Unfortunately, this time it's a bought one, but, you know, it's a good one. I mean, the co-op, they do good sourdough.
Yeah, they do.
Seeded sourdough. Right. Seeded sourdough. But, yeah, normally I would have... Again, I like it. Slow food. I used to be a signed-up member of the... There's an organisation called Slow Food International or something. They don't write very often because I think they're slow.
It's worth taking the time to make this because then you have several days of leisurely enjoyment of this stuff. You know, it's lovely.
And one of the things that I'm always stunned by with... You know, loads of Mediterranean food, things like that, is the simple act of, you know, toasting the bread and then just rubbing garlic over it.
Yes.
You know, it just I remember the first time I did that years ago. It's like an utter revelation of like how you can imbue so much flavour and
absolutely.
It can transport you to a different part of the world.
Yeah, that was an eye opener to me when that was first suggested to me. I'm like, oh, this is game changer.
Little drizzle of olive oil and scraping of garlic and tomato on top. It's like this is it transports you. This is remarkable.
Yeah.
Now here's a question I had because I wasn't sure. Because I cooked mine and then had it warm from the pan on the toasted bread. Yeah. Would you have it cold from the fridge?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It would toast the bread and then I'd just stick it on the bread, and the serrano ham on it. That's how I have it subsequently.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
The ham, I forgot about the ham. I couldn't find serrano ham, so I ended up having, what's prosciutto? Prosciutto, is it?
Prosciutto, perfectly fine.
Is that a similar thing?
Yeah, that would be the Italian version. Yeah, the fully Italian.
Right, so serrano ham is a Spanish thing.
That's my Spanish twist on it, yeah.
So if we're going to give it a score out of 10, which is what we do for the food ones, what would we give it? Steve, what would your score out of 10 be?
8.4.
Right. Very precise. Not quite enough for an 8.5, but 8.4. Kev, what would yours be?
I'd give it a 9 because I just adore it. It loses a point because it's just so damned addictive and I shouldn't be eating that much bread, really.
But yeah, because the sauce itself is pretty healthy, isn't it?
It's
really
a healthy sauce. It's just good stuff there.
The quantity of bread that you could easily consume with it.
Exactly.
Yes, or I could anyway. Certainly. Yeah, I mean, I'd probably go. I guess I was thinking we were going round numbers, but if Steve's broken out the points, the 8.4, I'm thinking yes, it could easily be an 8.9, maybe even pushing a 9 for me because it's really the sort of stuff.
Another
winner.
I feel a recipe book coming on somewhere down the road.
Don't let all the secrets out yet, Steve. So, again, if we'd been clever, we'd have picked what our next recipe is, but we haven't. So,
yeah, we forgot
listening.
To do that last time, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. If only there was somebody in control of this podcast able to steer us correctly. But, listeners, keep on listening for the next time.
Taking the Unbeaten Path, Part 3, Acceptance and Control. A vagabond knows they live in an uncertain world. The bus is cancelled. It rains. Your travelling companion doesn't show up. What happens next is an everyday universal moment of truth. Do I rage against a conspiring world, fizzing with anger and frustration, cursing the unreasonableness of it all, the outrageousness of people, the cruel hand of fate? Undoubtedly, a lot of people across the world now have got to this state. Everywhere I look, I see helplessness and anger. People despairing of mysterious dark forces that seem focused on ensuring their downfall. Wicked goblins and trolls who are at once cunning, blind, all-seeing and stupid. This is a crazy way of living your life. And I must confess I have practiced it with abandon. But it is the way of the vagabond to set down this burden and accept life as it comes, or in the case of the bus, doesn't. The only way to survive in this upside-down, shook-up, mad, bad, daft, funny, weird, extreme and capricious world is to be very clear about the things you can change and the things you can't. And by and large, the one thing you can change is yourself. How do I deal with this situation? What can I learn from it? What opportunities lie hidden in the pile of poo at my feet? This is not a new idea, of course. This goes way back to the great old Stoics of history, who have always said, focus on the things you can change and accept the things you cannot. Put down the paranoia that someone has deliberately let you down. Conspired to make the bus take a wrong turning. Design the events of your day to crush you like a grape beneath the sole of a heavy Doc Martin boot. As one of them said, it is more civilized to make fun of life than bewail it. And to take the vagabond way is to realise that life, well lived, is enough. And there is so little we can control. Till next time.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Kev's Cafe Corner. You may remember last time I regaled you with the aftermath of my Camino experience.
plunged once again as I was into the heavily policed and oppressive world of the pandemic. But it's time to leave those days behind us and come right up to date, to Monday, April the 8th, 2024, to be exact, 1,225 days after leaving Santiago. I was heading there again, back on the trail. For those peregrinos who have walked to Santiago, be it the Camino del Norte, the Primitivo, or the French Way, there's always a sense of unfinished business, and I was no exception to this rule. I knew at some point I would make the journey on foot from Santiago to the lighthouse at Finisterre, World's End. So, perhaps against my better judgment, I found myself sat on a plane at 6:30 a.m. in Alicante Airport as my fellow passengers filed on. I'd allowed myself 3 days to cover slightly over 100 kilometres. I was travelling light, a small backpack with just a sleeping bag and a change of underwear and a poncho, in contrast to the 21 kilos I lugged along the last one. I see this trek as a coda, if you like, to the symphony of self-discovery that took me to Santiago the last time. Save for my flight, I've booked no transfers, no accommodation. I'm operating on a leap of faith, something you get into on the Camino, the way will provide, it always does. It might not be what you want, but it will be what you need. The flight was uneventful and we touched down on time at Santiago Airport in the pouring rain. With the minimum of fuss, as per usual on an internal flight, I was out and on a bus towards the city within minutes. So far, so good. The rain was cascading down off the bus roof in great rivers, distorting the images outside, making the fields and dwellings look like impressionist paintings as we raced by. About 10 minutes in, we stopped to pick up a passenger, and as the bus set off, there was an almighty crash and the sound of broken glass. The driver continued on, seemingly unfazed by this, although his passengers were looking around in consternation, me included. About 10 minutes later, though, he pulled over and motioned us for us all to get off. A second bus pulled up and we all jumped on quickly, eager to be out of the rain. Ironic, considering I was going to head off into it on foot. As I left our damaged ride, I noticed a huge corner window had been obliterated, and in the short time I had to assess what had happened, it seemed to me that he'd misjudged a bus stop sign and clattered it with the big side mirror, which had snapped back and smashed the window. I couldn't help wondering if this broken journey was a bad omen, but I soon pushed those thoughts away as the bus entered the city and I stepped out onto its ancient streets once again. "Hello, old friend," I said to myself. I immediately knew where I was and I headed down to the old arches where I found a cafe tucked away and I took a table right at the back with a power socket to charge my phone. I ordered a hearty breakfast given that I had around 27 kilometres to walk that day, my intended destination being Negrera. At the table next to me were a young woman and her son. They had all the gear, the backpacks, the poles, good boots. As I was finishing breakfast, I engaged them in conversation. "Have you just arrived?" I said. They had indeed, from Sarria, 100 kilometres east of the city, and were heading to Finisterre. Jorun and her son Matty were from Belgium, and I was impressed that a 12-year-old boy was undertaking such a thing. I wished them buen camino, and we both hoped to perhaps say hi along the trail somewhere. This might sound an unlikely hope, but it happens on the Camino all the time. I had one more stop to make before I left the city. Casa Ivar. Ivar is a bit of a Camino legend who runs a YouTube page to help walkers, has an office in the town and a storage facility. It was great to finally meet him. He gave me my starting stamp, or SEO, as they're known here, in my Camino passport, proof of my doing the walk. The forecast, no matter how often I checked it, resolutely promised rain today and fine weather for at least the following 3. Currently, it was keeping its word. I walked into the square in front of the magnificent cathedral, this time resplendent in a bright yellow poncho as opposed to my purple one. I gazed up at the cathedral for a moment. Curiously, I'd never been inside, nor been particularly moved to do so, not being religious. Maybe one day. I turned and set my feet to the task ahead. It rained on and off, as I made my way out of the city, eventually having a break in Alto di Vento, a great little cafe hidden away just off the trail, most welcome, as the one I'd planned to stop at seemed to be closed for personal reasons. It was also a good time to catch my breath, as immediately following my break there was a good 2 kilometres of gradient to climb. Eventually, I was walking through a wonderful forest. Your mind on the Camino tells you that this is your reward for the hard 2 kilometres that preceded it. And I stopped for a moment. I stood motionless, meditating, breathing in deeply, inhaling the earthy aroma of the forest and the delicate birdsong that decorated the silence. I marvelled at how quickly it had happened. I had reconnected with my true Camino self. Next time, Nigrera and beyond.
Now, for the Bishop's Daily Bread today, I am swerving dangerously close to talking about bread making again. Back to this segment's roots, I suppose, but not quite all the way to bread. The pull of a variation to me on this one is a strong one. I am, however, returning to a topic I know I've covered a bunch of times on the podcast in the past, and that is of pizza dough. I think I spoke about it just a few weeks ago, in fact. Now, you absolutely have my permission to just skip on ahead if you just can't be asked to hear me drone on about pizza dough again. But perhaps this time my resolutely positive experience and delightful culinary journey will keep you here for my very short sojourn back into pizza land. Are you sticking around? Good on ya. Now, pizza dough has haunted me for years now. All through lockdown, I was trying different variations, different cooking methods, buying different bits of kit. The, you know, pizza stones, the pizza pans, pizza slice, the frying pan method, the grill method, the oven method, the oven and grill method. I don't think I tried the barbecue. Oh, no. Actually, now I say that. I think I did actually try the barbecue once. Funny how the brain works. Anyway, I must have 5 different pizza dough recipes, at least 5, if not more, recipes in my little pile of recipe slips in my kitchen, all claiming to be the one, the only, the holy grail of pizza dough recipes, and they all lie, inadvertently or blatantly, they all lie, except perhaps the most recent one. It might be pretty close to working well for me. It obviously depends on everyone's kitchens, everyone's environments, the sort of flour you use, how moist the air is, or, you know, what sort of yeast you're using, all those kinds of things. I've always been super puzzled by how little dried yeast is in some of these recipes. Like, I mean, for one recipe, something like, you know, 500, 600 grams of flour or whatever. But then it'll say 0.25 grams. It's a quarter of a gram of dried yeast or something. Like, a quarter of a gram. I mean, surely that's such a small amount as to be sort of chemically insignificant. Anyway, I saw a great video on Instagram of a lady doing a pizza dough, and she misled a little bit, perhaps my own fault for not checking really, but this one takes 2 days of prep. Well, the prep lasts over 2 days. You know, there's 2 sleeps between starting and finishing. Which I hadn't quite appreciated when I started in gusto, excited to have pizza. Alas, in the end, the result was very, very good. Her recipe starts with, a little like a sourdough. I've never tried sourdough. I've yet to plunge into that dark art. Not even during lockdown. I didn't even dare then. But I think it starts similar to sourdough. You basically put 100 grams of bread flour and a quarter teaspoon, which still isn't much, of dried yeast, and 100 grams of water in a container, mix it till it's nice and smooth, and then leave it covered overnight. So that's night one. Day two, you mix 290 mils of water, a quarter teaspoon of yeast again, 1 teaspoon of olive oil, 1 teaspoon of honey, 500 grams of bread flour or 00 flour, and then 2 teaspoons of salt, mix it and cover. And now the next bit is the slightly faffy bit. Every 45 minutes or an hour, you come and do stretch and folds. Stretch and folds. Sounds like a yoga exercise, doesn't it? Stretch and folds. Now, you do this three or four times, I guess. You do it four times, it's three repetitions of it, isn't it? So you stretch from a corner, in inverted commas, you know, corner of the dough, fold it into the middle, and you do the four or five corners, depending on how many sort of corners you end up making of it. And then you leave that 45 minutes, come back and do that three more times. So you end up doing it four times in total. And then, here we go again, you put the dough in the fridge overnight. Ugh, again. So that's night two. On to day three. Cor blimey. I mean, it's not a lot of work, but it does take time. So, day three, you divide the dough into four, and then you ball it up, and there's a sort of stretching method for the balls. If you find videos online, you'll see it. And then she said to proof for 3 or 4 hours at room temperature, and then your dough is ready to go. And this dough did work really, really well, except there was far too much for just one person. By the fourth day of having pizza for tea, I was a bit bored of it, to be honest. But it was very good dough, and they made good pizzas, finally. Still not perfect, still not perfect. Still a bit damp, a bit moist at all stages, to be honest. And I'm just not clued up enough to know yet what causes that. And I really, really, really must learn, because it'll, at least it'll stop me doing another segment of pizza on the podcast, if nothing else. Anyway, it was great pizza dough. It crisps nicely, still soft with a little bit of a chew, and it had flavour. It's great. And, of course, my next beef with the pizza industry, for want of a better term, is going to be cheese. Oh, my God. I tried fancy, real, actual, proper buffalo mozzarella this time. But it's just so watery, so wet. I mean, should I really be using the cheap stuff for pizzas, really? The stuff that's, you know, just like plastic, really? I mean, I've tried draining and drying the mozzarella, the proper mozzarella, before, but it's just still too watery after it's been cooked. I mean, don't get me wrong, I have used the pre-grated mozzarella in a pack, and I'm sure I'll be struck down for it one day. But maybe that stuff is better than the watery stuff for pizza? Let me know what you think. So, I've had some delicious pizza recently, but I'm ready to take it to the next step. How do I make the perfect dough in my conditions? I'll need to get scientific about it. Until next time. Oh! Before I go, a quick PS, a quick pizza dipping sauce if you want it, a la Domino's, a sort of garlic and herb dip. So, quickly, you go 125 grams of sour cream, 115 grams of mayonnaise, 1 teaspoon of oregano, 1 tablespoon of white wine vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic puree, I use garlic granules or garlic powder, something like that, a pinch of salt, a pinch of sugar, mixy, and there you go, that's your garlic dip. It's best if you leave it for a couple of hours before you use it, so the flavours infuse a bit, but you can use it immediately if you're forgetful, like me. Enjoy! So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, wherever in the world you are. Subscribe to the podcast, however you get your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon. The next episode will be out next Friday, all being well. If you fancy buying us a coffee, you can at buymeacoffee.com/thelongroadband. It's dead simple, just to drop us a few quid to support what we do. It even accepts Apple Pay and Google Pay. Super easy. All of our music and merch is available on Bandcamp, where you can help support a positive ecosystem for the music industry. Download, streaming, vinyl, CDs, it's all there. Thelongroadband.bandcamp.com. You can get all of our books through the Artisan Creative website. Head to artisan-creative.com. We're on Patreon at patreon.com/artisancreative. Big thank you to our current Patreons for your ongoing support. If you'd like to support us, you'll get free digital stuff and merchandise in the post if you want it. Help us create something different, something that entertains and something that inspires others. Join us on the journey. Patreon.com/artisancreative. Thank you once again, brave adventurers, vagabonds and explorers, for joining us on the long road. Remember, the world isn't beige. It's authentic, it's rich and it's real. Embrace every last bit of it. Until next time, the journey goes ever on with the long road. Bye for now.